My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, a man on a never-ending search for the perfect pizza. This show is the audio version of the Pizza Talk YouTube series, where I engage in interesting conversations with some of the country's greatest pizza makers and other artisans. Thanks for joining me on this quest. Hey, I'm Peter Reinhardt, and welcome to season two of Pizza Talk. I'm here in Charlotte, North Carolina, but we're also simultaneously on Martha's Vineyard with Nina Levin and her friend Georgia Macon, who have throughout the summer been cranking out pizzas and hoagies and all sorts of things on the vineyard. So welcome to Pizza Talk. You are helping us launch season two, so thank you.
Thanks for having us. We're super excited.
Great. Well, you know, we didn't know about you. There's a lot of people who are watching who maybe who've never been to the vineyard who don't know about you. But anyone who has been to the vineyard or spent the summer there clearly knows about you, because I think you guys became kind of the rage of the island. Everybody, when we interviewed Glenn Roberts and we talked to Ed Levine, both of them who summer on the island, both of them independently brought up was Stony, is it Stony Point? I lost your sound.
No worries. Stony Hill Pizza was
Stony Hill. I used to live near Stony Point Road. So you're Stony Hill Pizza. So they both brought it up and they said, you've got to talk to Nina. And we were going to talk to you, in season one, but then you've been so busy and we ran out of time. So we said, let's take a break and we'll bring you back for season two. And now you're just coming to the end of your season, right?
Our first season.
And what happens after that? When you guys, go on break, are you going to be staying on the island, leaving the island? Will you be still cooking or catering or anything?
Well, I'm going to do a little bit of private cooking, but everything's so up in the air with COVID. So I think we'll just shut down the pizza trailer and then just kind of see what happens in the world.
Play it by ear, in other words.
Yeah.
Like the rest of us.
Like everybody else, no pressure. It's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. But it sounds like, number one, it sounds like you had a great season, right? You were busy. You were putting out, and it started with pizza, but suddenly it morphed into sandwiches and hoagies and other things that you were doing. So Nina, tell us a little bit about sort of how this all came about and sort of the whole journey that you've been on that brought you to this summer of COVID on Martha's Vineyard.
So I moved back to Martha's Vineyard, my hometown, 2 years ago, and I really wanted to do something on the island that kind of hadn't been done before. And I didn't want to open a restaurant. I wasn't ready for that. So I saw a little niche for pizza, because there's really not a great pizza place on island. There's places that are, decent, but nothing like wood-fired. So I spent the winter building the trailer from the axles up, as Georgia says, and worked with a machinist and designed it, and then built the oven. And then just started in the spring, just really slowly kind of working out the kinks and everything. And then, yeah.
But first of all, I got to ask, you grew up on Martha's Vineyard?
I
didn't know that anybody did that. I thought people only just visited Martha's Vineyard. There are actually people that grew up on the island, and you're one of them. I know that I was kidding when I said that, because I had students when I taught at the Providence campus at Johnson & Wales who grew up on the island as well. But it's so few, usually it's like when I moved to North Carolina, it was rare to find somebody who actually grew up in Charlotte. Everybody moved to Charlotte. And so it's exciting to actually meet someone. What was it like growing up on the island? What was life like?
It was interesting. She's going to just hold some dough.
Okay, we'll talk to George a little bit more in a bit, but I know she's kind of like your right hand today. So we're going to let her get to go.
It was interesting. It was it's small. It gets really small in the winter. So it goes from like 150,000 people to around 20,000. So it drops a lot. And I liked growing up here. It's like, I can't really complain about it, but I did when I was a teenager.
That seems to be normal. Anyone who grew up on Nantucket or on the Vineyard, they say, I got to get off the island.
Yeah, you have to go. I think everybody needs to leave for at least a little bit. And then kind of, you can appreciate it more, you know, the beauty of the island. So yeah, I left for about 10 years. I left when I was 17. I went to culinary school and then came back a few years ago. I've done some summers off and on because I love working here in the summer, but yeah.
Well, where did you go to culinary school?
I went to New England Culinary in Montpelier, Vermont.
Uh-huh. Yeah, how was that? Did you enjoy that?
I love Vermont, so.
Yeah, it's fabulous up there. And it's a great school. And of course, anyone who's been to Vermont, you know, loves Vermont. It's all in the news right now today. Front page news about the state of Vermont has been the most successful in dealing with COVID as far as.
They've got their act together up there.
Yeah. Well, wait, but so a lot's happened between culinary school and this summer. You went on, you know, after culinary school, you must have gone on some kind of a culinary pilgrimage of your own.
So I did an internship in Boston at L'Espalier, which is now closed. They just closed last year. Or 2 years ago, maybe now. And that was an amazing experience. It was super fine dining. Kind of has gone out of style a little bit, I think. And they stopped when they were really on top, which was great to see. And then I went to Portland, Maine, and worked at Hugo's and Eventide, helped them open their new restaurant, Hugo's. They revamped the whole kitchen, and went down to Peru and spent 2 months down there basically just eating food, and it was amazing, in Lima. And then did a summer on the island, and then moved down to South Carolina in Charleston, where there's just like, there's so much good food down there. It was amazing.
Well, you've been to two great food stations. Portland, Maine is the Portland, Oregon of the East Coast. Basically, the two Portlands are two of my favorite food cities. And and I know that a lot of exciting, innovative things have been happening up there, and you were in the middle of that. And then, of course, Charleston. Everybody loves Charleston when it comes to food and wine. It's phenomenal. Who did you get to work with down there?
So I kind of met Glenn Roberts down there and started working for him, doing a recipe development, and so I do their social media as well.
So you actually knew Glenn off the island.
Yeah.
So when he comes up to the island, he already had a relationship with you. That's at Anson Mills, right?
Yeah, Anson Mills. I didn't know that he was on the island, which is crazy. and then I worked at a place called Butcher and Bee, and then with Cynthia Wong, who's a James Beard nominated pastry chef. She's amazing. She does incredible stuff. She just started her own company called Life Raft Treats, and it's incredible.
Was your focus in culinary and beyond mostly on the baking and pastry side?
No, until I moved to South Carolina. And then I worked with a friend of mine in the bakery there and helped him open kind of that bread program. And then I went over to work with Melanie Durant, who is the pastry chef at Fig, but she opened her own little breakfast food truck on the beach, and it was amazing. So I did that with her, helped her kind of set systems and all that. And that was probably my favorite job I've ever had. It was awesome.
It's a good training for what you're doing with your own truck now, right? So,
exactly. Yeah,
mobile unit. And so you were in the right place at the right time, it sounds like.
It was a great experience. You know, there was always something going wrong. So that this whole summer.
That's, I think, a really good point. Let's talk about that. Like when something goes wrong, that's probably the best training anybody can get is making it work when things aren't going perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Like the truck would break down, the generator would stop, we'd lose power. You name it, it happened.
What kind of food were you doing, you know, on the Carolina beaches?
What kind of what?
What kind of cooking and food were you doing there?
Oh, so we did, we made all our own bread, and we did breakfast sandwiches with like local eggs and everything we could get. But they were like, and then we would do pastries and drinks and coffee. It was really fun. It was like just so fun to make the menu and work with them. Yeah. We did a lot of Japanese milk buns that we do the breakfast on.
Everybody's loving those milk breads. And that, when you say Japanese milk buns, could you talk a little bit, for, because people have heard about this, but not everybody understands what the technique is that makes it the Japanese milk bun as opposed to sort of an American milk bun?
So it's an enriched dough, but it's also made with a tanzong, which is basically like a slurry, flour and water slurry that you take to a certain temperature and then add that into the dough once it's cooled. And it adds so much moisture. And then the Japanese milk bread is a bit sweet on the sweeter side. Like caramel, and when you brown it.
Yeah. Totally addictive. I mean, you can't stop eating it. One of our restaurants here in Charlotte became famous for it. Kindred, Joe Kindred makes that every day. And everyone who sits down at the restaurant gets a little loaf of his, and they just call it milk bread. But it came out later that he was using this tangzong method, which is essentially, from what you're describing, you pre-gelatinize some of the starches that go into the final dough, which makes the dough softer and more spongy, and it just does something. It's magic, right?
It is. It really is magic. I love it. I use it for burger buns now too. It's such a great.
Now George is with you, George was with you throughout the summer. Is she? Well, what's your role within the Stony Hill project that you've been doing?
Blue. She holds it all together, but I'll let her talk about her background.
So, Georgia, are you from the island too originally?
No, not at all. I'm actually from St. Louis, Missouri originally.
Wow.
Came here by just sort of a stroke of fate. So I'm from St. Louis, and then I went to culinary school in France at Cordon Bleu in Paris.
I think we've heard of that place. It has a reputation. Yes, something.
So
of course, Julia Child put it on our maps. Everybody already knew about it in France, but now
it was an idol for a long time. So
what was that experience like? Were they hard on you because you were an American?
Oh yeah, it was pretty. I mean, it was incredible. But if you didn't speak French very well when I came, and if you didn't speak French, the professors just would not even talk to you. So you learn very quickly, which is, but it was, they're very, very rigid, very old school in their technique. Like, we were making things that I don't think anybody's made in 150 years, but that's just sort of French for you, you know,
very
traditional.
They're very proud of their heritage, but also that foundation is great for being able to do some new modern innovative things as well.
Yeah. Exactly, the techniques that you learn and just the formulas. It's great. And we had to do every single thing by hand, from like Italian meringues to brioche, which I would not wish on my worst enemy, but no.
You do all your lamination, like croissants and things, by hand too? No machines, no sheeters.
Later in my career, wound up doing for a whole season on the island. So it was something I never thought I was going to have to do, but it turns out it was useful.
How did you end up at Martha's Vineyard?
So I was living, I had moved from San Francisco. I was at Tartine for a few years there.
Another one of our favorite places.
Yeah, it's a good spot. I was at the original bakery on Guerrero, and then I helped open up the first manufacturing. And now there's what, like 17 of them.
Is that right? They're really popular.
I don't know. I mean, it's a lot. It's an empire at this point. I think he's got 2 in LA, 7 in the Bay Area. And then,
I don't know if you've seen it, but we actually filmed an early episode of Pizza Quest at Tartine with Eric Wolfinger, who was one of the bakers at the time. And in the background, Chad's shaping breads. We never could get him to kind of come and talk on camera at the time. This was 10 years ago, before there was a manufacturer in any case. But what what Eric did was he took some of that the dough that they use for the for their famous country French breads. That's my favorite loaf in the country. And he made pizza upstairs in his apartment where he lived above the bakery, and he made pizza for us. And it was a great episode. So any of you guys who are watching right now, just put put tartine or put want to go back to our archives and look at some of the early episodes when we're on in the Mission District in San Francisco, and you'll see what we're talking about as far as tartine goes. But so that was a great place to do some sort of training and build your resume and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really cut my teeth in terms of I wasn't much of a bread baker up until that point. I loved it and I was fascinated by it, but I didn't really know much until spending time there. So then I moved to New Zealand to open a bread bakery there, but then ran into some sticky visa troubles.
Wow, that's a big leap over to New Zealand.
Yeah, I figured I wanted to be far away at the time. San Francisco is a lovely city, but it can really grind you down after a while.
What was New Zealand other than the visa? I'm sorry, but other than the visa thing, what was New Zealand like? It's a beautiful country.
Incredible. Yeah, really, really beautiful, really great people. I mean, not many people, which was sort of what I was going for at the time. Great people and like a really blossoming culinary scene right now, which is really cool. So you really have the ability. It's still building a lot, so you can really make your mark there if you've got something new and something you want to really offer to the community, and they're really receptive to it. So it's an incredible place. If you can get there, I recommend it.
Well, I'd love to. Travel right now is not so easy. I mean, it's good that you're able to get back when you did.
Yeah.
So how did the two of you connect and start working together?
So I wound up on the island just super randomly because I was leaving New Zealand with no real plan. And I had a friend who was here, so I just popped on over. And then somebody who worked for me, I was running a cafe here the last couple summers. My right-hand man is friends with Nina, so we got connected that way.
Yeah.
Hit it off, made a cake together last summer.
Yeah, we were married.
And then
It all started with the cake.
Yeah, with a wedding cake. Yeah, it was great. 1 year strong, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, there
are
quite a bit.
So since then you ended up launching Stony Hill, which is mostly pizza. What we're going to do is in the next segment, we're going to see you guys make something, maybe a couple things. But I know that because you're getting ready for the weekends. I guess you'll be opening for your loyal following, and you'll be doing pizzas again. But for today, one of the other popular items that you have been making have been the hoagies, right? The sandwiches. And so you're going to show us how your take on a hoagie. I'm a Philly guy, so you know I have my own sort of passion for hoagies. And so we'll talk hoagies a little bit, but maybe a few other show some other things that you've been working on. So it's more than pizza what you're doing, but the thing that we're and the thing I before we break for segment two is the pizzas that I've seen on Instagram, your photos, the word of mouth that's out about the pizzas is that they're phenomenal. And when you look at the photos, you just want to eat them. And one of the signature pizzas that everybody's raving about was your corn and shiitake pizza. And that particular one is going to be in our Pizza Talk book. The book will be coming out next year. And we're calling the book Pizza Quest. My never-ending search for the perfect pizza continues. That's the full title of the book. And we're featuring some of our favorite pizzas from the people that we met. So we're getting one of yours in that book. And we're going to, we'll talk more about it later on, but, what else did you have in mind for our little show and tell section of the show?
So this is our second to last market. So we're still doing Sicilian style pizzas, which we're making right now. And Georgia just put them into the pans. And then we like to do a dessert as well for every market. So we did a butternut squash and what would you call it? Butterscotch? Yeah, blondie.
Uh-huh.
That. And then what else are we going to do? Oh, we're going to do a sausage hoagie on this bread that we use for the Sicilians, but it's like a Panda Cristal hybrid.
Almost like a focaccia, it looks like.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And then we'll do like a nice little snappy sausage with some onion jam and some other goodies.
Fantastic. Well, I'm getting hungry just hearing about it. So why don't we take a little bit of break? I'm going to give you a couple minutes to set up. We'll come back in part two with Nina Levin, Georgia Macon, Stony Hill. Is it Stony Hill Pizza or what? Is that what you call the...
But then sometimes we change it to Stony Hill Hoagies.
Yeah, exactly. It's really should be just Stony Hill Empire. But still right now on Martha's Vineyard. But who knows? Martha's Vineyard today, the world tomorrow. All right. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Nina and Georgia and rejoin us on Pizza Talk. We're going to be talking and maybe tasting hoagies. See you in a minute.
Stick around for more Pizza Quest after a word from our sponsor.
Good food is worth a thousand words. This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you. My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes, and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm Peter Reinhardt. I'm with Nina Levin, who's in Martha's Vineyard in the commissary kitchen of Stony Hill Pizza, right? And you got some dough, it looks like, to your right, rising. What are you doing there?
So this is our Sicilian style dough. It's like a hybrid of a Panda Cristal. It's a 90% hydration. We use Winston Mills flour. So there's the red fife in there. And then what else do we use? Sir Galahad as well. And there's a little bit of sugar, yeast, and olive oil.
Yeah. Nina, could you explain what pan de cristal means for those who don't know that term?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. It was like a search to find the recipe. A friend of mine gave me kind of his hybrid on the recipe. But it's like a traditional Spanish dough. They use it with pan de con tomate. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's sweet. It's almost like focaccia. It's really, really light and fluffy.
Baked straight on the hearth traditionally.
We hear Georgia telling us now, baked straight on the hearth instead of in a pan in the traditional form. But a wet dough like that's not easy to bake right on the hearth.
Yeah, and this is really temperamental. It always gives us problems, but it gets to about like double this size.
Look at that. Wow.
And you can see the crumb there.
So you use it both for like a Sicilian style pizza, but also for sandwiches.
We usually bump up the weight in the pan for the hoagies, and then just do a smaller amount for a Sicilian.
It's got that great open structure that I think that's kind of one of the signatures of pan de cristal, is that it's known for those big holes.
Yeah, and it's slightly sweet, and it gets that nice, kind of like the Japanese milk bread. It'll get that nice crispy edges.
Nice. Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay, so you've got that going. So I think what I just saw you do is to finish stretching it out into the pan.
Yeah, so we'll...
You weigh that dough before you put it in the pan?
The weight?
Yeah, what's the weight?
1,800, yeah, per pan.
1,800 grams?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these will pretty much double in size once they're proofed, and then we'll pop them in, and then we par bake them, and then put a blend of, we do a really classic tomato sauce and then do a blend of sharp cheese on top. And then we'll do pepperoni as well. And then they come out in these chunks.
Yeah.
Wow. And basically it's about 4 pounds of dough when to put it into a sort of our American equivalencies, about 4 pounds of dough to give you that big thick. It's amazing how much it rises up, because when I do 4 pounds of dough in a pan that size of my dough, it only comes up about 1 inch, but you're getting like 1.5 to 2 inches of rise.
Nice heavy duty pans as well for like deep dish almost.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you do sell Sicilian pizza as well as Neapolitan style.
Yeah, we do the Sicilian style squares, individual ones at the market. They're probably my favorite thing that we make.
Really? And do the customers respond that way too? Is it about as much passion for those as for the Neapolitan?
I don't know. Sometimes I think when we sell out of pizza, like the rounds, they're okay with getting the Sicilians.
But some people come specifically for the Sicilians.
Partly probably depends on where they grew up. You know, if they grew up in Brooklyn somewhere, you know, they probably, you know, crave that Sicilian.
Right, exactly. Or Detroit.
Yeah, or more like a Detroit thickness. Yeah. So, okay. So those are rising now, and then you'll bake them off after they rise.
Yeah, we're going to bake them off. We'll probably pop them in the proofer, which is just a warm oven.
Yeah, right.
And then we're going to make a hoagie really quick. We've got some of that same bread that I just cut in half here. Toast that. We've got a really yummy, spicy Italian snappy sausage, some Gruyere cheese, some Dijonnaise, which is aioli and Dijon mixed together. And then we've got onion jam, which I made with brown sugar and balsamic vinegar and red wine vinegar.
It's one of my favorite things in the world.
Yeah, I want to melt this cheese on the sausage and pop it in the oven, and then we'll make the hoagie.
So you're gonna you're melting the cheese on the sausage, not on the bread.
No,
so you're gonna put the hot filling on top of a untoasted piece of bread.
The bread too, but I like it toasted on the sausage because I think it kind of like envelops it a little bit.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you toast it all at the same time.
But that's just a preference.
And that's a lot of steps. Like when you're doing, a line of people, you're doing some extra steps to give them that special hoagie experience. Yeah.
So we'll do at the market, we take the trailer there, even when we do hoagies. So we'll heat it up in the wood fired oven and then do those all kind of ahead of time and wrap them and then serve them.
Oh, I see. So they're already made up. So the cheese does it stay warm and stay melty and kind of stringy?
Yeah. Or? Sausage kind of in the oven for as long as we can. We usually do them in rounds. So we'll do like, I don't know, 15 at a time. And then by the time that those sell out, we have another round coming. By 10 o'clock and the market starts at 9.
We doubled our bogeys last time. And yeah. 10 minutes later.
It was crazy.
Is what happens when you create a monster. Everybody wants it. And then you got to figure out a way to keep them coming.
Yeah. And then so the other hoagie that we'll do next Saturday is on a challah bread that Georgia makes. Really delicious, big challah with benny seeds from Anson Mills on top. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We do Aleppo, aioli, marinated artichokes, roasted red peppers, Castelvetrano olives, provolone, sliced tomato, shaved iceberg lettuce, and shaved onion.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
And it's like a vegetarian Italian, we call it.
It's amazing. It must be great for someone like Glenn Roberts to see his Anson Mills flour being used on Martha's Vineyard in the sandwiches that you're making.
Yeah, it's great. It adds such a depth of flavor. We also have the dough over here, the pizza dough, if you want to take a look. This is a blend of Galahad and the Red Fife as well. And this is all sourdough.
So your pizza doughs are always naturally leavened and no yeast at all? Do you spike it with a little commercial yeast?
No yeast at all.
Naturally.
Is that true for the challah and the Pan de Cristal?
Pan de Cristal, yeah. Pain de Cristal is a blend of starter and yeast. So it adds a little bit of that sour flavor, but no blend for that. And then the challah is just straight yeasted. It's a straight dough.
Okay. Okay, good. So you're not yeast averse. It's just that you just love working with the natural starter for the pizza dough.
Yeah, I really like a challenge and never knowing what's going to happen.
But that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Have you, talk about, you know, like things that can go wrong. Have you had any kind of situations like that that you've had to troubleshoot?
Yeah, we had a day that we just scratched the pizza in general because it was just not moving and it was cold out. And it hadn't been cold for like a couple weeks, so we weren't prepared to, you know, up the Levon and the pizza dough. And yeah, I just called it. I was like, we can't serve it. It's too flat. Like pita
bread. Yeah, right. No, I would never throw it out. It's just too precious, but you turn it into something else. All right. So now we've got the cheeses melted over the sausage. And did you say you make that sausage yourself or do you buy it already made up?
I buy it already made up. I'm like a sucker for a really, I would trashy Italian sausage, like a really traditional one. So this is from our local Kronik's Market, which is a local grocery store. And it's absolutely delicious.
Looks like you're putting down the onion jam's going on there.
And that gets kind of softer because the bread is nice and toasted. Mm. And then, so we did another meat. We've done meatballs. We've done eggplant parmesan. What else have we done?
Straight Italian, cold cut Italian.
Yep.
Yeah.
And definitely people liked the vegetarian Italian and the eggplant parm the most.
Really? So, and the eggplant parm and the vegetarian are both vegetarian sandwiches. So that, so that means there's a lot of support for vegetarian, for plant-based foods.
Yes. So you can see the sausage is all covered in the cheese.
Oh, God. It looks like a killer, like Philly cheesesteak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a nice, funky Gruyere.
Loving it.
I know. You can't taste it. We'll just have to tell you what it is.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to live through you right now. But that aioli, that was the garlic aioli that you put on? Is that what?
An aioli, but we mixed Dijon.
Dijon, that's right. Dijonese. Yeah. So.
You know, you can just give it a little traditional wrap here.
Yeah. Now, if you were making that, you know, at the market, what would that sandwich sell for?
We've never made this one before, but thinking 13-15. Big worth,
worth every penny. Well, it's not just a sandwich or a hoagie. It's made with your homemade bread, you know, which they're not going to see anywhere else. It's made with some heirloom grains and flours. It's made with, you know, a lot of extra technique with the oven and the jam. While we just say it's onion jam, that takes time to make onion jam. I make it all the time and I love making it, but it takes about an hour to put together a batch.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a good one, and we might throw green apples on it. We're still in the So there it is.
Well, since you've got that wonderful sandwich, feel free to take a bite and we'll eat along with you if you want to. I'll leave it up to you. So I have no problem if you want to talk with your mouth full, because I do it all the time. But I do want to ask, and Georgia, you can chime in on this too. You know, in terms of constructing a sandwich, I think the art of sandwich making is just like the art of pizza making. You know, it's all about the layering of flavors. Do you have kind of like a thought process or a philosophy that you follow in creating these kinds of foods?
You go.
I don't know. I think I feel like we work really well together. And when one of us has like an idea, we kind of just build on that. Like if we want to use butternut, we just kind of build off of that and play around with flavors and ideas. And
we're good at rattling off. Like if we just have one launching off point, we both have like a laundry list of things that we like to eat with that thing. Since we both have a fine dining background, we do build them a lot like dishes, you know?
Yeah.
find that balance in acidity, creaminess, salts, etc.
Yeah, right, all those different components. And in fact, when you mentioned putting some sliced like green apple or something like that on there, it made sense to me immediately because you've got the umami and you've got the cheese and you've got a lot of soft textures, but nothing crunchy. And in an Italian hoagie, you get the onions and the lettuce and all this crunch factor. And the apples, I think, it would be the perfect complement to add that missing dimension. Yeah,
definitely. But George is gonna cut what I'm most excited about in this whole world. She's gonna cut these blondies that we just made with butternut squash puree and little butterscotch shards. Yeah, we use a little bit of rye flour in there too, just for some flavor.
So it's a butternut butterscotch blondie. So you got butter is the operative word here. There must be some butter in there as well, right?
Yeah, it's a significantly buttery blondie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Blondie.
So is this something that you've just created? Is this a new product for you?
Yeah, we just came up with it like an hour and a half ago.
Oh, so you're going to be tasting it for the first time right now? Yeah, we love that.
So yeah, we'll switch around and help, she'll do that.
Sure.
Talk about it a little bit.
Sure, yeah. The blondie itself, as Nina said, we use brown sugar and rye flour just for a little more nuanced and depth, like deep sweetness.
Uh-huh.
Because blondies can be sort of like saccharine, you know?
Yeah. Blondies are really having kind of a their moment again. It's like brownies are always popular, but blondies, they come back in waves, and all of a sudden
people have
cravings for blondies.
Totally, yeah. I'm a huge blondie person. And the really cool technique for the top here, you see this like little giraffe pattern almost.
Yeah. How'd you do that?
You basically make a hard caramel, and then you tip it out on the silly pats and push it out until it's this paper thin layer of glass, as some people call it.
Uh-huh.
And then once it's cooled, you can break it up and put it over the batter. And as it cooks, it'll sort of melt into it and soften it.
Oh.
Just give you this really nice, butterscotchy finish. So it's pretty delicious.
Yeah, that's a great technique. I wouldn't have thought of that. You can take some hard caramel, put it back on the batter, and then it would soften a little bit. Does it reharden when the blondie cools?
No, because it's already taken up so much of that moisture from the blondie.
Uh-huh.
And as the blondie cools, it's actually going to sort of release a little bit more moisture, so it'll continue to soften a little bit. Like, it might be a little bit toothsome right now, but
yeah,
it should just sort of melt into its surroundings.
Well, that's a great idea. Yeah, see, I love that you're taking some of this, the classical techniques that you've learned and things that you've picked up, along the way, whether it's at Tartine or at some of the restaurants that you've all worked at. When you were in New Zealand, did you pick up any tricks down there that you were able to bring back that you hadn't seen before? Or was it mostly about ingredients down there?
Yeah, mostly ingredients. I saw a mill down there, a flour mill that even Dad hadn't heard of yet, which was pretty crazy. And it's wildly popular now, but it's called a Demeter mill.
Huh.
And it's this technique that basically allows to mill the grain incredibly slowly over like a really controlled, cool amount of time, and so you wind up with this product that's just so fine and super full of flavor. I learned about new things happening, but yeah, no new tricks that come to mind.
Can we have a fish bite somewhere?
You can use that one. My favorite thing, George, will you talk about the Italian cream soda, please?
Yeah.
Favorite thing in the whole world. I get excited about not pizza now because we've made it.
Right. You're right. Now you've moved on into blondies and did you say cream soda?
Yeah.
Oh my God. And it's made with some rye flour, but not exclusively rye, right? Is it also red flour or
yeah, it's just about 20% rye flour.
Uh-huh. So that's another thing that's hot right now. Rye is back in a big way. So you got the Blondies and rye, and you bring in a kind of a couple different trends into one dish. How's it taste? What do you think? Are you there?
I think it's delicious.
So the theory is proving itself out in fact. And will these be available then to your, when you open tomorrow, or is it today or tomorrow that you'll be opening back up for tomorrow?
10 a.m.
Which is nice because I normally have time to soften a bit. And we took it really dark, which is what Nina and I both like to do when it comes to caramel. And I think a lot of things, like one shade below burnt, is sort of my favorite flavor.
I always tell my students that when they're talking about their bread and they want to pull out the bread too early, I say, if it's not burnt, it's not done.
Exactly. Right. We called it tartine dark in San Francisco.
Tartine dark. Yeah, exactly. So that's great. So you've now come up with a new product to sell. Butterscotch butternut, and of course this time of year butternut squash is the perfect ingredient to use. So seasonal. It's not something you're going to make in the middle of the summer, right?
No, we like to kind of go with the seasons here. There's some really great farms that we use products from, so
The things during the winter, if you get bored, you can just open up a Blondie's station at the market and just keep cranking out pastries. You can use winter scotch throughout the whole winter season. But that's excellent. Thank you. So I can't wait to try that. It's funny because just in I think it was in the latest issue of People magazine, there was a Blondie's recipe, and I can't remember whose recipe it was, but I don't know if you saw it. But it's a brown butter Blondie, which I thought was a great technique. Yeah.
Yeah, almost. Maybe next time.
Just one more little tweak, to throw into just to make it even more difficult to make.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fabulous. Is there any of that hoagie left that you made?
Yes.
Can you hold that up again? We got to see it in the wrapper, but let's get a really good close-up. And as we kind of wrap things up today, I'd love to leave everybody with kind of like the lingering memory of a sausage hoagie that they're not going to get to eat unless they're on Martha's Vineyard or they make it themselves. But you'll be posting all this on Instagram, right? You put a lot of photos up on Instagram so people can see them there. I don't know if you share any of those techniques, but once you see it, then everybody's going to want to make it. So what do you think? Does it taste as good as it looks?
It tastes as good as it looks. I think the green apple would be great on there.
I love that idea. Yeah. Or even some Vidalia, like fresh Vidalia.
Yeah.
Shaved onion.
Yeah. Just again, I just think sandwiches are an art form that again will never go away. They're going to be between pizza and sandwiches. That's like what most people eat. And we take them for granted. Because everyone eats, whether even a burger, which some people say is not a sandwich, but I think is again a type of thing. But there's a reason why these things are so popular, and it's because they deliver so much flavor. And a lot of that flavor delivery is all about the contrasts that are going on there texturally and ingredient wise. So it looks like you guys have really zeroed in on it and have an amazing thing going on the island. I hope you get a chance during the winter season to recharge your battery so you can come back even stronger in the spring and see where this all leads. Do you have any sense of a plan or a vision or a hope for where you'd like to see it go?
Nope.
Any plans to do pop-ups off the island?
I don't know. Maybe.
Take it off.
There you go.
I don't know.
You'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll see.
Something to think about during the winter around a nice fire.
Yeah.
Well, Nina, Georgia, thank you so much for being with us today on Pizza Talk. Thanks for sharing some of your great food and inspiration. And I'm looking forward to putting your pizza, your corn and shiitake pizza, in the upcoming book. So keep an eye out for that. I'll keep all our viewers posted as the progress of the book comes along. I'm writing it right now as we speak. And in fact, I'm working on some of the new pizza recipes that are going into the book. There will be 35 pizzas that were either mentioned or featured on Pizza Talk or were from somebody who we had on Pizza Talk. And so there's going to be some wonderful, inspirational photos. You're going to actually send us photos of your own pizza. Each creator of their pizza will send us beauty shots of the pizza that will go in the book. So we're really excited about that. And we're so glad to have you be a part of that. And I can't wait to get to the vineyard myself. And for my first stop, you know, will be right at your truck. Is it a market, a particular market where you guys hang out?
Yeah, we were doing the West Tisbury Farmers Market, which is at the Agricultural Society Fairgrounds. So it's outdoors. It's a great location up in West Tisbury.
Fantastic. So anyone who wants to follow Stony Hill Pizza on Instagram, right? So it's like, what is it? Is it a hashtag, or do you have to do, I don't even know how you do Instagram.
They'll find it.
Just in the search, go Stony Hill Pizza, and you can continue to follow the journey. Thank you again for being part of Pizza Talk. We'll see all of you on the next episode of Pizza Talk, and we'll see you on Martha's Vineyard. Thanks again for being with us. Nina Levin, Georgia Macon. Have a great day, great market tomorrow, and see you all soon.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Pizza Quest is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.